Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning at verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might or muchness. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Please be seated. Several weeks ago, we began this journey in Deuteronomy chapter 6. I'm not even sure what week we are on any longer. And we're taking an analogy from a TV show. Not that I preach television, but we're taking an analogy from a TV show. And that TV show is Forged in Fire. How many have watched it over the past couple of weeks? How many hadn't watched it before, but because I'm preaching on it now, you're watching it? One person, okay, maybe one person, two people, okay. Forged in Fire. And so we've walked through this idea as we see on their show that you start with this billet, and sometimes they have to create their own billets of metal to be worked. And so sometimes it's just a steel ball bearing that has to be heated and formed into shape. But we've been talking the last couple of weeks about the design. Right? The design. Because if we want to build something, if we want to craft something, we have to know the end goal. And so the end goal of our conversation has been what? This is really painful if you don't. A disciple. What is a mature disciple? And so we spent some time looking at Matthew 28 and Galatians chapter 5 talking about what a mature disciple is, so that we have this end product in mind. And in weeks prior to that, we talked about the necessity to understand the blank slate, the billet that God has given to us, that if we're going to spiritual parent our children, we need to understand who our children are. And this morning, I want to move on to the process. So after they've received their billet or they start to make their billet, we walk into the forming and sharpening of this knife blade, the forming and sharpening of a disciple. And from our passage, what are the two words that we get to this idea of honing? What are the two words in Deuteronomy chapter 6? What's that? Diligently what? Teach. To teach diligently. The image that is given in the Hebrew is to sharpen with a whetstone. To keep going over it and sharpening it better and better. And so we want to talk a little bit about what that looks like and how do we hone that. And if we look at the passage this morning, picking up at verse 7, we see that there's a lot of shalls. There's a lot of shalls, and we want to kind of break into that. On the show, though, after they've gone through the design phase, what is the first thing that they do? Those of you who have seen the show, what do? What? They pick up the metal. They grab the metal, and then what do? Actually, this spur of the moment, this isn't even in my notes, but I'm like, wow, God. Isn't it incredible, Dennis, when you're preaching? Heather, when you're teaching, and you're just like all of a sudden, wow, I totally missed this before. No. Oftentimes, the majority of times, the very first thing they do is they take a rod of iron and they weld it to the billet. Why? So they can hang on to it. That stuff gets hot. And sometimes tongs aren't enough to get into it. So you're the rod of iron. Who has God attached you to? Kids. But if we don't physically have kids right now, this is a question that we've asked for several weeks in a row now, right? Who is God inviting you to spiritually parent? Because if God's inviting you to spiritually parent them, if we take this imagery further, God desires to weld us together to them for a period of time. And a lot of us don't like that idea of being welded to anything because we are individualists and we like our freedoms. And yet God says, if you're going to be the tool that I need, then you need to be welded together. And we talk about life on mission when we're doing that stuff. But they weld it together, and then they take this rod, and they heat up the fire, they stick it in the fire, and then they pull it out of the fire, and magically a blade appears. No, what do? They beat on the thing, and if they're high tech, they go over to the pneumatic hammer, right? You see the only going doo, 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 doo. So then it's a shape, right? Well, talk to me about the process. Come on. Back in the fire it goes, right? To heat it up, to soften it up, to do what? To pull it back out and beat on it some more. And then what happens? Back in the fire. Now, on the show, they have usually 3 hours, 3 to 4 hours to do this. But here's part of the point I want to get to this morning. What if those guys stuck it in the fire, pulled it out, beat on it, and I said, you know what? This is just hard work. And just sat down. And said, I'm done. What's the end result going to be? They're not going to have a knife. They're going to wind up kicked off the show, right? They're going to be one of the first ones to leave because all they have is this partially formed slab of metal. Did they have a great design? Probably so. Most of them do. Very rarely have I gone, what in the world is that design? They usually have some great designs. They have great intentions. They have great plans. But when it starts to get tough, if they were just to give up on it, it would become nothing. As a matter of fact, it would probably be thrown into the scrap heap. How often when we're spiritually parenting do we give up? We say it's just too hard. It's getting too hot in the room. This is taking too much work. It's too much effort. And we give up on the unfinished product. The invitation of God this morning in Deuteronomy chapter 6 is to realize that if you're going to step into, and I don't say so much if you're going to, God's already thrown us into spiritual parenting roles, whether we want to or not. But the issue is, you've got to realize the work that's involved, and are you prepared yourself for the work that's involved? These words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them. You shall talk of them. What is the them? The words. What are the words? In particular, in this passage. That you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and all of your soul and all of your... Jonathan? Oh, he's distracted. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and all of your muchness. It was like a month and a half ago that we looked at that word and we defined it as muchness, the everything that we are, the words. Now, that does not, because if we're talking about loving God with all of our muchness, then all of the other commandments, all the other instructions, all the promises have to come into the mix of conversation. But the direct conversation here is that we shall love the Lord our God, the Shema of Israel. And then he begins to break that down. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house. How many of us sit in our house? How many of us sit in our house? Come on, let's... At some point in time, we're all sitting in our house, right? What are we doing when we're sitting in our house is the question. Watching Forged in Fire. And of course you're talking about, look at the Holy Spirit burn in there. And look at that disciple being formed, and right? The invitation of God is when we're sitting down, that word to sit also means to dwell, to abide. So in other words, it's not just when we're physically sitting down. When we are living in our home, what are we supposed to be doing? Notice, it is a command. It is an instruction. It's not just a mere, I wish you would. It says, you shall talk. You shall talk about it. You shall talk about what? Loving God, thank you. You shall talk about loving God with what? All of your heart, with all of your soul, all of your muchness. How much of our talk in the house is about loving God? And how much is talk about how are we going to pay these bills? How are we going to deal with this child? How are we going to deal with these parents? You know what, boy? It is Mother's Day. So what do we talk about? What do we spend time talking about? Does that mean God doesn't care about our finances? No, but if we're talking about loving God in the midst of finances, it takes on a different perspective. So you shall talk of them when you sit in your house. When you walk by the way. Anybody walk around at all any time of the day? Yeah? Yeah? Now, when they're talking about walk by the way, we also understand that to encompass, because their much of their career and much of their life would have been what? Walking, shepherding, right? Marketplace. So there would have been a lot of walking going on. If you keep in mind that this is before they've even entered the promised land, right? You got this great story of Jericho, and they walk around. What does it look like to walk around in the midst of my job, in the midst of my hobbies, in the midst of my life? You shall walk around doing what? Talking about loving God. You shall when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, what is the last thing that's on our mind? And when you rise, what is the first thing that comes to mind when we wake up? So as I look at this passage, I begin to wonder, where are the gaps? Where are the gaps? I ask us because in 2018, us Americans are really good at finding the excuses and rationalizing things away and justifying them. So I'm just wondering, where are the gaps? Okay, well let me ask this more harsh, convicting question of myself and of us. If there are no gaps, then why do we treat it like there's gaps all over the place? Because we're so busy, except that in this it says in the busyness we're supposed to talk about it. So why is it that there's so little talk about loving God? What's that? We're afraid. Why are we afraid? What's that? Because if you start talking about God all the time, you're going to be a freak. Right? Politically correct. It's not proper to talk about God. I might like lose my job if I talk about God. And then what's going to happen? Find a new one. Go live with your family. Yes. Yep. Anybody heard of a really old guy, he's dead now by a few hundred years, Ignatius of Loyola? Anybody? He coined the concept. Now, I'm not saying he was the first to come up with it, but he kind of coined the concept, finding God in everything. Finding God in everything. And it wasn't this New Age concept that, you know, we're all God and God's all of us and all. It wasn't that at all. It was to help clarify in the religious sector of the time to realize that God is in the process of everything. God is everywhere. And just like Christina said, our problem is that we tend to come to church and think that God's here. And then if we have a Bible study or a small group or a home group, we go, okay, well God was there. And then if we happen to sit down and spend some time reading our Bibles or listening to worship music or spend time in prayer, we go, well, God's there. But somehow in our minds, we don't make the connection that when I leave that moment in time, God is still present. And God is still working. Finding God in everything. And I recognize that there are differing theological perspectives on God's specific involvement in the finer decisions. You know, does God really care what can of soup I buy? And I'm not really going down that road. We could talk about that. But to help us realize that God is present in each of the aspects of life, and often we neglect God in them, or we fail to see God in them. So what does it begin to look like if at the very start, intellectually, but I think there is something significant about verbalizing, which is why the invitation is to talk about them throughout the entirety of our life. That when we're talking about our house being built, we're talking about what God's doing. When we're talking about traveling, flying across the pond, we're talking about what God is doing in the midst of it. When we're at the hospital caring for sick people, people that we don't want to be around. When we're in our jobs and we have a really difficult employer or employee. When we're at home and our perfect Mother's Day is messed up because one of our kids drops and breaks something or spills something, grape juice on the carpet or whatever it is. Are we following through with talking about how we love God? How would that significantly change the contour of our lives if we allowed our kids, this is dangerous now, we allowed our spouse in the heat of the moment to go, so let's talk about loving God. See, our problem is we want to run the opposite because right now we don't want to deal with God, we want to deal with the issue. And what would happen if we actually began to invite God into the issue? What could that look like? I want to invite the kids to come up. Okay, if you're a kid up here, raise your hand. Okay, there we go. Just making sure we're all on the same page right now. How many of you can hold your breath? How many of you can hold your breath? How long can you hold your breath for 30? If you can hold your breath for 30 seconds, raise your hand.
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay, we've got a little competition going on over here. 30 seconds, 45 seconds? No, that's too long. How about we test it? Okay. So I want every one of you to go find a big kid out there somewhere and look at them face to face. And they're gonna help monitor. Okay? Go on. Go find a big kid. An adult.
Do I have to?
Yes.
I'm not going to put my face in the water.
No, I'm not asking you to put your face in your water. I'm just asking you to go find a big kid and look at them, and we're gonna have them help time you how long you can hold your breath, okay? See, go right over there. I think Granny D's looking for somebody to time. Jeremiah, right there. Okay. Does every kid have a partner? Yeah, every kid have a partner? Okay, adults, if you want to participate in this as well, you can as well. And then in 3 hours, I can go, I'm done with my sermon. Okay, are we ready? I'm gonna time as well, so we want to see who can hold their breath the longest. That's gonna be really tough to do, Chris, when you're yawning. That doesn't count. Okay. All right, we all ready? Does everybody with a kid have a timer? Who does not have a timer? Does everybody have a timer? Okay, then I don't need to do it. When you're, let's see here, timers stand up. Please. Timers, stand up. As your kid breathes, runs out of time, sit down. This way I can see who the last one standing is. Okay? You ready? Oh, hold on a second. We're getting organized. Okay, we all good? Everybody's got a timer. Timers are all standing up. On your mark. Get set. I don't see too many adults willing to participate in this process. Oh, your timer won't stand up. Okay. Okay, Luke, come on. Come on. Megan will time you. No, okay. Okay, on your mark. Get set. Go. They're allowed to let it out if they need to. They just cannot inhale again, okay? That's... Once you're done, sit down if they're already done. We got some people cheating, it looks like. Wow, 30 seconds? We're still going. We've got... Oh, just went down. We got the big guy up here. What are we at? This is pretty good. I can't do this. They're watching. Oh, just finished. What was this? 121. 124. Okay, so the big guy. Nice job, and you didn't want to do it. Nice job. Okay. Hey, okay, you got to get down here. Okay. All right, you guys come back up here for a minute. Or two. Okay, so 120, what was it, 122? 121. A minute, 21 seconds.
I don't believe.
How many of you got 30 seconds or less? Okay, 30, right at 30? Okay, 30 seconds left, 45 seconds. No, a minute? Well, Jeremiah won with 121. Okay, so here's the deal. What if I told you, you can only take one breath every 2 minutes?
You'd probably die.
Well, Jeremiah can hold it for a minute 21.
I don't believe it. No, I can hold it longer, but I just didn't really want to do it.
You know, I wish more people would be honest like that. You could have held it. You know what? Here, come stand up here for a second. Come stand up here, because I don't think everybody heard that. Can you say that really loud again, please? You could have held it for longer.
Yeah, I could have held it for longer. I just really wanted to open my mouth.
He could have held it for longer, but he just really wanted to open his mouth. You can come sit back down here. I don't want to embarrass you. But here's the deal. Boy, what a lesson we could learn just in that statement. I should just be like done with the sermon. How many of us could hold it for longer? Now I'm not talking about breath. How many of us could hold it longer, but we're like, I just wanted to open my mouth? The things we learn in children's sermons. So you don't think it would go too well if I told you could only breathe every 2 minutes?
Brad.
A breath every 2 minutes. You'd die? I don't know if you'd die. You'd pass out. What if I said one breath every 5 minutes?
Die.
You'd probably die. Well, I don't know. One breath every 10 minutes? Dead. Die. Boy, we're really going down a bad track right now. Well, here's what I want you to keep in mind.
I think one time I watched a video on someone that could hold the breath for 24 hours.
I don't think you could hold it for 24 hours. 24 minutes might be possible, though. That's a long time, isn't it? You held it for a minute 21. So 24 minutes. But here's what I want us to keep in mind. Is it natural for us to breathe?
Yeah.
So when we stop our breath, is it unnatural?
Yeah.
when we stop our breath, it's not unnatural? Oh, well, you want to hold your breath for 5 minutes? So do you think that would be unnatural? For 5 minutes. That would be very unnatural. Okay. For any of us, that would be very unnatural. Can anybody in here hold their breath for 5 minutes? I'm just looking around. I mean, sometimes like people who do, you know, snorkeling and scuba and different things like that can. So I'm just, anybody, 5 minutes, 2.5? Okay, doesn't matter. Okay, here we go. Last 30 seconds. You ready? Paying attention. Last 30 seconds, then you can go get sugar. That's a cool deal, right? Okay. So I want you to listen carefully. Shh. Ready? I want the adults to listen too. Shh. We realize that if we don't keep breathing, we'll die, right?
Yeah.
But for some reason, we think that if we don't keep breathing God, it's okay. Does that make sense? For some reason, we think if we get God on Sunday morning and then no other time, that we'll be fine. And the reality is if we don't stay engaged with God, just like if we don't keep breathing, we will die. We'll die physically, we'll die spiritually. So as you're breathing, I want you to think about God. How about this? For the rest of the service, every breath you take, you think about God. Can you do it, Jonathan? Well, I think it'd be good for you to try, okay? And the first thing you can think about God as you take a breath is how good sugar is that he made. So go ahead and go get a snack in the back. I know it seems kind of extreme, but do we understand the concept? I mean, so many of us think, well, I could just have God here, and maybe I can have a second helping of God here or a third helping of God here. And we think we're going to be just fine spiritually. But it's just like stopping breathing. It's not okay. And we need to come to the realization that God is involved in everything and he wants to be invited into everything. See, the point of this passage, Deuteronomy 6, is discipleship. And it's about remembrance and it's about training and it's about learning and it's all about being. Being in relationship with God all of the time, whether we're sleeping or we're awake, whether we're hanging out at the house or going to our job or playing in hobbies, how do we involve God? How do we become aware of the presence and the work of God in everything that we do? And in verse 8, he goes on, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand. Why bind them on your hand? Because what? So you're looking at it all the time. Most of us use our hands throughout the day, don't we? Does anybody not use their hand? That was kind of a trick question, right? Because if you acknowledge that you didn't use your hand, you used your hand. Okay. Yeah, bind it on your hands. Now, the Jewish people took that very literally, and they bound stuff on their hand. But the point that God's trying to make is you're always using your hands, whether you're working or playing, whether you're holding a newborn child, whether you're spanking a child, whether you're praising a child, you're using your hands. And so if we could begin the process of going, wow, if my hands can remind me that there is a God, and that I'm to be thinking about God, and that I'm to be loving God, what would it look like if every time we began to see our hands, whether we're typing on a keyboard or swinging a hammer or setting a hook on a fishing line or whatever it might be, that we go, wow, God gave me hands. And he gave me hands to be used for his glory. And he gave me hands to love him with all of my heart, my soul, and my muchness. And it's a great reminder that with hands and activities that we're supposed to love God with all of our strength then, right? All of our strength, everything that we have. And he goes on in verse 8, bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. Okay, wow. How many of you can see between your eyes? Without a mirror. You can try and you can get to, you know, somewhere in here. So why would God say bind them as frontlets? so that other people can see. Well, for other people to see and be reminded to talk about the love of God, what has to be true? What's that? You have to be talking. You have to be what? My life has to be representing the fact that I'm loving God. For others to look at it and go, oh, that's right. You're loving God. So that's right. I'm supposed to be loving God. See, when God gives these instructions, it's individual, right? Put on your hands so that you, Terry, put it on your hands so that you see what's going on. But Terry, you're supposed to be wearing it in the face, in your whole body. You're supposed to be wearing this desire to talk about God all over you so that when somebody else runs into you, they're like, I'm supposed to be thinking about loving God. I'll be honest, not everybody that runs into me thinks about loving God. Carrie, why are you laughing so hard right now about that? Never mind, I don't wanna stir another pot here that too late. But here's the reality. I mean, I'm honest. I'm broken, right? I've got issues. Just talk to my wife. I have shortcomings. Just talk to my kids, right? But am I allowing God to be so infused in my life to transform me to such a degree that when people do encounter me, hopefully more often than not, what they think about is loving God? Let's keep going. Bind them as a sign on your hand so that you see them as frontlets between your eyes so that others see you. You shall write them on the doorpost. What about it? People passing by? Coming in and going out? What's that? Those that are in your home? Well, to understand this more fully, we got to understand that for somebody that is practicing Judaism, the mezuzah is actually supposed to be on every door frame in your house, not just the front door, which is what many of us are accustomed to thinking or remember. It is supposed to be on your bedroom door frames, your kitchen door frame, your office door frame. There are a couple of exceptions, the bathroom being one of them, but I'm pondering why the bathroom doesn't need to be there, because there's some people that definitely need to be thinking about God on the toilet. Am I wrong? Okay. I mean, we joke about it being our porcelain throne, right? And maybe we need to allow God to... Anyways, okay. So... the idea being that everywhere you go, as you enter and leave the house, as you enter and leave the bedroom, as you enter and leave the kitchen, it is a reminder that you're thinking about loving God. And it's right there in front of your face. It is placed at eye level at each entry door. As a personal reminder, as a corporate reminder, as a family, for the Jews, it's been an intentional effort to continually have in front of them a clear reminder of who they are and whose they are. It's a reminder of the covenant that they have with God. Do we walk around our houses being reminded of the covenant we walk in with God? Or do we just go, oh yeah, there's a kitchen. There's a bedroom. There's a guest room. There's a study or a living room or something else. And then finally it says, you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. How many Jewish homes have you seen? Think of pictures of Jerusalem, right? How many homes have you seen with gates on them? Not too many. So what's he talking about? Gates of the city. Gates of the city, gates of the marketplace. Again, a corporate element. So the invitation moves from personally, have it in your home and all over your home, to make it a public declaration. Have it on your gates, the gates as people come in and out of your city. Do they recognize who is at the head of this city? Do they think it's the priest? Do they think it's the king, or do they recognize the head of the city as God? The workplace, the marketplace. I think this simple phrase in here is a great reminder that in business and in government, in the people of God, that we are to be about loving God. One of many of my greatest frustrations is businesses that call themselves Christian businesses but don't live Christian businesses. A Christian business is not made because a Christian is the owner or is the manager or is something else. A Christian business is a Christian business because it's been dedicated to God and it functions out of the principles of God. Loving God with all that they are. If you have that possibility, what does it look like to be a Christian business owner that runs a Christian business? Think about it for a moment. To call something Christian implies what? A follower of Christ. If I call myself a Christian, it implies that I'm a follower of Christ. Now everybody else can look at my life and determine whether I'm truly a Christian or not, but it implies that I'm a follower of Christ. So to declare my business a Christian business is to declare that my business is a follower of Jesus Christ. And others that look in on that business can affirm or deny the reality of that business being a Christian business. I don't see too many gaps in here. I don't see too many places where God goes, okay, you don't need to think about me right now. I mean, I think we'd like that, wouldn't we? When you're driving in your car, it's okay if you don't think about me. Watch the road. You know, when you're out doing your hobby, hunting in the woods, it's okay to not think about me. Just look at the elk that you get to shoot. That's not in there. So what will be involved if we begin to say, you know what? I want to follow through with what Ignatius said. I want to find God in everything. In everything. I want to find God in my marriage. I want to find God in raising my kids. I want to find God in beating on a piece of wood because it's stuck. I want to find God in the art that I do. I want to find God in sitting and reveling at the creation He's created. I want to find God when I'm dealing with the lousiest person in the world. I want to find God. What could happen in the body of Christ if all together we sought God in everything? That we didn't take our relationship with God so cavalier. We actually said, it is all about you, Jesus. It is all about you and you alone. Three questions for Courtney. And everybody else can just listen in. Number one. Where in the course of my life, my daily living, or where in the course of my life have I found it difficult to see God? I'm convinced all of us have places. We're kind of like, man, I've never thought of God in the bathroom with me before. That's why we all laughed and we all freaked out, because we're like, well, that's kind of like the realm of hell, isn't it? The bathroom. In some houses, in some days, it is. It's an encounter of hell, but you know. but in all seriousness, there are places in our lives where we have become very lax, very cavalier, non-pursuant of God in the midst of it. Because we just think, for some reason, it's my responsibility. God doesn't care what I eat. God doesn't care what food I buy. God doesn't care about what shower curtains I put up. God doesn't care. And I'm not saying you have to be overwhelmed with each of those. I'm saying, do you invite God into each of those? And are you aware of His presence in those processes? When I get in the car to go grocery shopping, when I get in the car to go to work, when I get in the car to go fill it up with gas, am I attentive to the presence of God? See, if I'm not attentive to the presence of God, I can't bring somebody else along with me to be attentive to the presence of God. If I'm not allowing God to disciple me, there's no way in the world that I can healthily disciple somebody else in the process. If I'm not finding God in everything, it's going to be really difficult for me to be a spiritual parent because I won't see God in anything. Number two, where in my life is God inviting me to be more attentive to living out the love of God with all of me? Where in my life right now, I'm not asking you to look at, you know, my goodness, I realize that my life is just like chaotic and I need to put this into practice. I'm just asking you to identify one location right now. One location. Where in my life is God inviting me to be more attentive to living out the love of God with all of me? Is it when I wake up at 5 a.m. and I'm working out on the treadmill? And God's going, you ignore me there. What an incredible time, what an incredible invitation to start running with God, to drink coffee with God, to have a steak with God, to sit at a computer and input numbers with God. Number three, number one and number two had to deal with me, right? Number three, where in my spiritual child's life? So this assumes that I am pursuing parenting spiritually. That assumes that I have somebody in my life that God's been inviting me to disciple and invest in. Where in my spiritual child's life is God inviting me to speak concerning loving God more fully? Here's the thing. So often we are quick to declare where in somebody's life something needs to change. We are. How often do we invite God to show us where he's trying to work on changing somebody? Right? That's our parenting style. Our parenting style is, you just did this and so now I have to discipline you for this. Rather than pausing for a moment and going, you know, the reason they did that is because of 15 steps back here. And I so badly want to fix that. And the reality is God's showing me that this is what's going on in their life. How about some harsh realities, right? Because we're good with that stuff. Kids don't do drugs for the sake of doing drugs. There's something in their life that is going on that caused kids to do drugs, that they want to pursue it, that they want to grab hold of it. It's not the drugs, and yet we fight so hard against the drugs. What if we begin to fight so hard against the things that are in the background, like parents who don't love their kids? Parents who are loving but abusive. What about kids who are just so darn lazy that all they do is sit for 15 hours a day on a computer? They don't do something productive with their life. Guess whose fault that is? It's not the kids. It's the parents. For some of us, we need to step up and actually start being parents. The issue actually isn't our kids. The actual issue is us. And carried over spiritually, oftentimes the issue spiritually is not the disciple that we're walking with, it's us, the discipler, the spiritual parent. And so we need to begin to ask God, what needs to change in me? What am I taking into my own instead of what you're doing? But then we carry that into the discipling relationship, the spiritual parenting relationship to go, God, I look at their life, the son or daughter of mine, I look at their life and I recognize the mess that I came from, and by the grace of God, you have continued to work on me. Where by the grace of God are you working in their life? Because I can list you a litany of areas that I want to see you change, God. How often, husbands, are we guilty of that with our wives? How often, wives, are we guilty of that with our husbands? I see a list of areas that I want to see God change their lives. Instead of going, God, where are you working in them right now? Finding God. An approach that says, God, what are you doing? Where are you doing it? What is my role in it? Rather than, God, do this. Or, God, do that. Courtney, enough questions? Okay, good. Father, we desire for you to father, for us to child. And as you mature us and we become fatherly, we desire to father and mother children that you bring into our lives. God, I pray. I pray a very old prayer. I pray a prayer that was given for a young man who couldn't see. Father, would you give us eyes to see? Would you open our eyes to see what is really going on? Would you give us an awakening and an awareness to see beyond the surface level? Father, would you cause us to become mothers and fathers who are passionately in love with you because of your great love for us? Spiritual mothers and fathers who are passionately in love with you, who desire to parent as you see kids. Father, help us to remove our physical, chronological barriers to assume that kids have to be young and that parents have to be old. Would you awaken us to the lives that you have placed around us, that you are inviting parenting, discipleship, life-on-life investment? Would you identify for us those people that you are calling us to be welded together to for a period of time to journey through the heat and the formation, the sharpening, so that each one of us can be instruments fully formed for your glory, fully available for your usage as you see fit. Father, we ask it in your name, in the name of Jesus Christ, in the name of your Holy Spirit.